Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it is Tuesday. It is Toy Department time. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. Yet again, I need to start the show with the mea culpa, Kolsky.
Not really.
I skipped one of the homework items this week.
Oh,
I didn't
that,
skip it.
That you do owe an apology for. You're right.
So, for all of you who watched McCartney 3-2-1, you got one up on me.
I got two or three up on
right?
you.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. I'll catch up on that shortly. So, I got to be honest. You know, we've got Ted Lasso in the homework this week, and I got sucked into a season one binge getting ready for that. So I totally slipped my mind.
I have already been like I should watch Ted Lasso again before it starts twice.
Yeah. No, it's a strong pull.
Because once you start, it's like Pringles, man. You can't stop.
Indeed.
It's like, especially just, you know, in our modern world where we all need a pick me up, it's just like an injection of joy right to the main vein. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's like just all that, like that positivity and it like somehow like not, it's not cheesy. Somehow,
right.
I like that. How they pull that tone off,
or maybe it's the right kind of cheesy. I don't know what it is, but that's the thing. You're describing it. It hits like really almost nothing else.
I don't know if we talked about this when it aired. It was something that just popped up to me in the rewatch. You know who directed those early episodes?
I remember noticing, but I do not remember now. It's not Fred Savage, is it?
It's Zach Braff.
Oh yeah, Zach Braff. Yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah,
that's mostly what he does now, I think.
Yeah, no, I think he does a lot of directing, and obviously the creator Ted Lasso was the creator of Scrubs, so I'm assuming there's
good relationship there. Bill Lawrence, is it?
Yeah, Bill Lawrence. Yeah, and it has his tone. I think a lot of that tone is him, right? That sort of injected it a lot of his series, I think.
It's funny, Scrubs. It might be the last, you know, goofy 30 minutes I felt this way about. Like, that show was a little more melodramatic in general, but similarly, like, these stupid, cheery bastards really make me feel good.
Yeah. And they really love each other.
Yeah. You know what I mean? A lot of love going around.
Yeah. All right. Well, We'll be talking a lot more about Ted Lasso next week when we actually watch the new ones.
Amen.
I gotta say, I thought I was gonna get a lot of the same feel good vibes from Never Have I Ever season 2, and not that I didn't. It's not, and I didn't think it was bad. It just kind of felt like, all right, this is more. I only watched a couple, but I didn't have that same like, I'm so excited to be back in this world and hanging out with these people thing that I have with Ted Lasso, and I thought that I would.
The comparison I was gonna make actually is Sex Education, you know, because I think in some ways they're very similar shows. High school dramedies surrounding the sex lives of teenagers, right? Or romantic lives, I guess, maybe is
romantic
a way
lives. Yeah, that's probably
yeah. Yikes, my bad. Not porn, just high school dramedy. And I don't know what it is either. I think I like this maybe a little more than you, but I feel similarly about like, I just was so, you know, the next season of Sex Education, I'm like texting with my wife about weeks in advance. And
yeah,
this,
like there was a little news nugget that dropped out this week. I think it was a trailer, right? Jemima Kirk's going to be in it. And I got all excited. I was just
yeah. Like, and this was like snuck up on me. And my wife was like, did we finish last season? I don't remember. And I was like, yeah, you know, there was the funeral. Remember? And
I mean, it literally picks up right like minutes after it left off. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were like, she was like, oh, yeah, you can watch that one without me. And like, again, it's entertaining when it's on, but it doesn't feel quite as essential.
Yeah. It also feels simultaneously more and less real than Sex Education, if that makes sense. Right.
Yeah. You know, did you get to the episode where the mom goes to India?
No, I've not gotten to that yet.
OK, so I actually might have watched 4 or 5.
Oh, yeah, you got way past where I did.
I will tell you, the next 2 episodes are a lot more original and interesting than the first 2, I would say.
Okay.
The All first right. 2 feel like finishing the first season in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. That does make sense to me, actually. That's kind of that. Maybe that's why I feel like it's more of the same.
Yeah. You know, so yeah. I would say, like, try the next 2 because there's more to it. And you do, there's a change in narrator, at least briefly. So that's fun.
Well, that I knew from the change in narrator. Wait. We talked about this last week, I feel like.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that there was a little. That was originally supposed to be somebody else, I believe.
Yes.
So, yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to add on that? I know we just got to roll through that pretty quick. You know, the cast is still great. I like.
It's a really enjoyable show.
Charming about the first season is still charming.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So
totally. Very enjoyable show. I have nothing really bad to say about it. And like I said, it got better to me in the 3rd and 4th episodes and a little more interesting.
That's good. All right. I'm interested to hear that.
You spend a decent amount of time with the mom in India, which is pretty cool.
All right. I'm excited for that. That feels a little bit like Master of None kind of detour. You know what I mean? Like go to another country, do something a little different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For a few episodes.
Yeah. Okay. For an episode anyway. There's interesting stuff. Stick with it for a couple more at the very least.
Is it like a bottle episode sort of deal?
I mean, I think you could, not exactly. No, but I think there are like just different aspects of the show that happen in the next 2 episodes.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's talk about Space Jam. You are not at the point of fatherhood where you're watching a lot of kids movies yet, right?
No. The only thing my kid watches is either sports with me or animal, like real animal stuff, you know, documentaries.
I had a tough time.
And the Baby Shark video. Sorry.
This Space Jam video because I feel – or movie because it's been so long since I watched television that was – or any kind of program that was just designed for kids, I feel like.
Right. That makes sense.
This felt to me like it was aimed straight at the heart of like a 7 or 8-year-old boy. Like it has the movie has the attention span of a gnat. There's like – constantly things and visuals and jokes and stuff coming at you all the time. And it has those sort of kid one-liner sense. And I feel like this is even different from like the classic, like Bugs Bunny one-liner thing.
How so?
You know what I mean? We're like less clever than those, you know what I mean? Like less that old school sensibility than, you know, I don't know.
There's certainly a little less old school sensibility and maybe a little more like madcap insanity, but I actually
a lot of shoehorn pop culture references for sure.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
But I actually thought like it was reasonably clever, like dad joke clever, but reasonably clever.
Dad joke is a great way to put it. Lot of dad jokes.
LeBron really leaned into like a goofy dad character. And look, here's what I'll say. I didn't hate it. I kind of thought I would hate it.
Either.
No, I know. I kind of thought I would, and I didn't. And there's no doubt that LeBron is a much better actor than Michael Jordan. Like, Jordan was so wooden and, like, reading cue cards off screen type of stuff, you know? And LeBron's not gonna ever get confused with Daniel Day-Lewis or even, like, you know, Daniel Craig, but he's funny. There's a little something to him. He's got a little bit of presence on screen.
He has some screen presence. I would not say he's a great actor, but
no, but as actors go,
he's years ahead of Jordan, or even would you put him ahead of like Ray Allen?
I'd put him in the same group as Ray Allen. Maybe not quite Peyton Manning.
What about Kevin Garnett?
Yeah, I think probably like Kevin Garnett, we saw play himself really, really well.
Yeah,
but I don't know if that means like LeBron played himself. I
mean, LeBron's playing himself here. Yeah, right. So, and
well, no.
He played himself in Trainwreck. He played himself too, right?
That's what I was going to say. I would say LeBron's performance in Trainwreck was similarly impressive, if you will, to KG in the Diamond movie.
It's hard. I think it's probably harder for these guys to play comedy, honestly, than KG's role in the Diamond movie. Although KG's doing a little comedy there too, I think.
I think here's what's definitely true. It's much harder to play comedy without the help of really good comic actors. So
yeah.
Like LeBron is better in scenes with Cheadle, right?
Yes.
When he's doing it by himself with the cartoons, there's some struggles. But like
or the kids, to be honest.
Yeah, but like, think of the Marvel movies, you know? Like, professionals have some trouble acting to green screen, you know?
Yeah, man, it's hard.
It's hard. So, like I said, as athletes go, he's like a solid B to B plus as an actor. And this was like reasonably entertaining. And I can see how, like you said, if you're like between the ages of 5 or 6 and like 12 maybe, and a big basketball fan, this could really
maybe have some dad issues.
Sure. Yeah, it speaks to some dad.
Really wear the dad issues on the sleeve in this.
I thought that was a really interesting choice too. Like,
yeah,
you know, I guarantee LeBron doesn't want to be seen as the sort of father he portrays in this film, right?
Well, I think it was. I think he did want to be seen as a guy really learning how to be a good father, and his family is important to him, right? Like those things are true, even when he's like not being the best dad, right? It's he
totally,
but
he
loves him so much, and he wants the best for them.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
So, like, I think what I'm saying is like I think LeBron was totally comfortable here painting a fictional story arc for the purposes of like developing the movie character LeBron. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
But he's also going to get like even when he's a bad dad, he's still writing the names of his kids on his shoes before he goes out to play. You know what I mean?
And I'm not saying he was even a bad dad. I'm saying like he allowed the character to have an arc.
Correct. Yes, absolutely.
And again, like we're setting the high jump at a foot or two, but that the bar is lower for athletes when it comes to movies. And the you're right, it's a kids movie, but I didn't think it was a terrible one.
No, it's not terrible. And like the moments that are supposed to be touching are touching.
Yep.
John or Don Cheadle, you know, I think is really excited to make some. I'm the bad guy, like,
oh my God.
Well, taking in the shorts faces. You know what I mean?
Don Cheadle. I love Don Cheadle, man. I love everything about Don Cheadle. I love his work. I love his Twitter presence. I love him in the Kendrick Lamar video. He's great. And he spread his arms as wide as he could and gathered up all the scenery and just munched it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what movie he's in, and he had some fun, man.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, this is not going to be submitted for your consideration this year. So I'm just going to chew this scenery and go full on ham.
I'm going big. It's for the kids. Yeah. I'm going big. It's the right thing to do. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah. I think there was a certain age kid, like you said, it was probably 7 to 12 year old, mostly boy, I think, that is going to, like, this movie will stay with them for a long time. That'll be my guess.
Yeah, man. I didn't even know those people existed with the first Space Jam until this one got announced. But they're there.
Yeah, there's
a whole group. And I was like 13, I think, probably. I should look it up. When did it come out?
I'll get that for you. That is a
96. So I was 14 or 15. So I was just out of the range.
I bet those people will hate that movie.
Yeah.
Right. People who have love for the original.
Exactly. And those people are, you know, between what? So 89 to, back to like 84 to 89 births. So
yeah.
Those people are, you know, early 30s right now. Mid 30s anyway.
The world that we live in, of course, there was also a, you know, simultaneously as all this stuff came out, right? There was also a actually Space Jam is terrible movement that also, right. You know, like, yeah, you love Space Jam, but it's actually terrible.
It probably
that also came with it.
It probably is. I mean, terrible is maybe needlessly strong because, again, that was a kid's movie and I think it worked. So the question kind of with a movie like this, the question is more, did it work? Not is it like artistically viable for an adult or a movie reviewer?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. Like I've watched the first one, so I'm not gonna cast aspersions. But I think it is a movie with an amateur actor at its center. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think the basketball players had bigger parts, right? As I understand it, than they do in this one.
A little bit, and Bill Murray had a big part and was funny. But again, kids' movie and. The main guy was less good. I mean, I think the biggest difference in quality of these two is probably that LeBron is a significantly better actor and less difficult to watch than Jordan was.
Yeah. What do you think of the modern day Bugs Bunny voice?
I'm glad you brought this up. I hate it.
Yeah, me too.
What happened?
Do I just hate it because it's different or do I hate it because it's bad?
I don't know, but it just sounds more like a angry old man to me than like a fun-loving wabbit.
Yeah. He does sound older.
He sounds like he's smoked a lot of cigarettes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just like they were like, well, you know, Mel Blanc was Mel Blanc and we got to find someone and we don't want to have someone do a Mel Blanc impression. But I just would have gone a different direction, I think.
Yeah. I had some sympathy because I feel like, oh, that's got to be tough to cast. You know what I mean?
Of course.
But, like, we're not saying that about Daffy. Whoever did Daffy, I think, was fine.
Right.
You know what I mean? Talked less.
Right.
Sounded a little different.
Well,
it was fine. You know?
Yeah, but a lot of those did feel more impression-y, right?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, Porky Pig has to be an impression pretty much, right?
I think so.
Like, I don't think you can do anything else with that character other than just try to do that, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You can't all of a sudden be like, well, that's all, folks. What? Who's that?
Like, yeah. You know, take it. What direction are you taking it in? Although, obviously, they did take it into, you know, 8 Mile territory for a minute, which.
That was tough.
It was tough for me, but I felt, again, like that's something that, like, a 9-year-old boy would think was awesome, right?
Right. Right.
Like, oh my God, he can rap, you know?
And I do think you're in a tough spot there between making it a rap that a 9-year-old can really identify with and understand and also one that an adult can respect.
Yeah. Can I tell you one thing I really didn't particularly enjoy? The just hour and 50-minute commercial for Warner Brothers intellectual property vibes that were, you know, sprinkled throughout.
Yeah, it was an
was
attempt.
Was that a feature of the original?
Yes. Well, I think it was more Nike and Gatorade, but yeah. The sales job was definitely a feature of the original. To me, you're absolutely right. Like, they tried to play it off as, like, we're just having fun with pop culture references, but, like, an adult can't help but notice that, like, you're selling your product.
Aggressively. Like, it was more heavy-handed than like, your Top Chef.
Well, I don't know about that, but it was around that level, which is tough.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, you're just
well, and also, but see, that's annoying. It didn't bother me a ton. I am not bothered, but I am hilariously entertained by the like moments of sort of LeBron legacy building that are built into the script, because I just picture LeBron being like, where's a good moment in this movie to explain why I should be called king?
There is some of that. I did feel like there were certain checklists too of like, hey, we're gonna get this reference in.
Yeah,
there's gonna be a Taco Tuesday reference. Yeah, you know what yep. I mean.
LeBron definitely had like script note privileges.
I feel like I don't even know it's LeBron. I feel it's more Maverick.
That's the same thing. LeBron Inc. LeBron yeah. Inc. had script note privileges.
Rich Paul had some things to say.
But honestly, even like, you know, the Maverick character was kind of played to be a doofus, right? Like, I appreciate that these guys were not too proud to make themselves movie characters. You know?
Yes, I agree with that.
Like, sure, plenty of it was self-aggrandizing, especially for LeBron, but that just makes me laugh. And for the most, yeah. And it wasn't like they ruined it just to talk about how cool they were.
Yeah. This is a definite side tangent, but did you catch Rich Paul's girlfriend, new girlfriend out there in the world?
Yes.
How random and great is that? It's Adele, by the way, for people who don't know what I'm talking about.
It's Adele. It's totally random, and it is so hilariously unlikely in, like, the best way. It makes me really happy, and I don't even know why. I don't have any real feelings about Rich Paul. Like, some people have complaints or whatever. I just think he's good at his job.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I'm sure he has some sort of agent drama, but I think, yeah, I have no feelings about Rich
Paul.
And,
like, the story of both of those people, frankly, is incredible.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're just somehow the world, we live in a world where somehow those two people end up dating is spectacular and hilarious, and I love it.
I want to know how they met. Oh, and I would love to have been a fly on the wall when, like,
right?
They started vibing, you know what I mean?
I would love to know if, like, one of them did the sort of celeb reach out through representatives. I'd like to meet that person. Or if they just, like, bumped into each other at a thing and, like, were surprised at how well they got along. You know, like what is the meet? Is there a meet cute for Adele and Rich Paul?
I really hope there's a meet cute.
Me too.
Speaking of which, I'm now tangenting the tangent. If you haven't seen this week's Dave, with Doja Cat.
Oh yeah, I'm an episode behind.
Truly excellent episode. It's not exactly a meet cute, but it is an interesting look at celebrity dating.
All right.
In the modern world. This season of Dave has been really great.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay. We should jump to what was the last thing on our list? Sorry, I don't have the list up. Here it is. Gunpowder Milkshake.
Yeah.
You can tell that I enjoyed watching Gunpowder Milkshake from me being excited about it.
That was a tone that sounded like someone who enjoyed themselves.
I did enjoy myself. Look,
I was very curious to see what you would think of Gunpowder Milkshake.
This is not, I wouldn't say this is A plus material by any sense. It is pulp, I guess would be the word.
Well, you know, I think it's A plus material in one sense.
Ooh, what sense did you find that to be A plus material?
I think it achieved everything it wanted. Right?
Yes.
Like if we consider A plus
yes.
to be a success in whatever you're attempting, then I think in that respect it's an A plus. It's not groundbreaking or, you know, new in the same way that Mad Max Fury Road was kind of its own A plus. I think this is kind of its own weird A plus. It is weird. It's violent. It's got some definite John Wick vibes to it.
Yeah. I mean, I also found, like, I think if you like those kind of like Matthew Vaughn, Guy Ritchie, British gangster movies, it has some of those vibes too. I got some like Drive vibes at times a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of that. That's the thing is I did like, ultimately, I found it to be a little bit derivative.
Okay, fair enough. It's not as weighty or original as something like Drive, certainly, but I don't think it pretends to be. So again, I you're right, certainly in what you meant when you said that. I'm just saying, I think this movie is exactly what it wants to be, and there's a level of success in that.
It's totally fun. Totally fun. And it is, it's a movie in which, you know, you could almost even say it essentially proves that you can make this kind of movie starring and about women and pull it off, completely pull it off, and have none of that be a big deal. It's not even really talked about all that much at any point.
No. Well, and that's the thing to me.
Kicking ass and you know, and assassinating people.
Right. Well, that's always sort of been the thing to me. Like there's a sort of thought process I use in general in movies like this. That is sort of my version of willing suspension of disbelief that I think sort of captures what you're saying. Just, you know, people will say things like, well, that's ridiculous. You know, like, this is what would happen. And, you know, I can't believe this didn't happen sort of thing. And, like, yeah, there are some movies that stretch believability to a point that's not interesting. But generally, when it comes to goofy action movies like this, my response is, sure, that is what happens 99.9% of the time, but this is the 0.1% where they made the movie about it, right? And, like, I guess I would say the same thing if you're like, well, there's no men. Like, what's going on? But, like, unless you're hung up on that for some reason, it's not something you pay attention to because the whole thing's ridiculous. This is a ridiculous scheme, and like, this is the one where there didn't have to happen to be any men around on the yeah. winning team. Oh well, like, it's not a thing.
Yeah,
like, there's lots of other there's lots of other gun stories where there are lots of men around all the time. This is the one where there weren't, and that's kind of why it was interesting enough to make a movie about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, look, yeah of course there are lots of things that are completely ridiculous in terms of
right
ability to happen in real life.
Yeah.
Not the least of which is how would that diner remain open?
Seriously. But, well, it's so funny too, and they keep and talking
there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and like, who would go back there? Because they keep being like, well, the diner will be safe, and it's like, not from what I've seen, guys.
Yeah. No. There's a lot of evidence that the diner, that stuff regularly goes down there.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, our safe haven, the diner. You mean like the spot where all those people got killed?
Yeah. And you actually see it over decades, so that right. you know it's been an operation that it I also definitely wondered if the food there was any good.
It must be, also, right?
There's also, like, right in the beginning of the like I believe the first scene, right? Like she's sitting there waiting for her mom for 3 hours with the milkshake. And then they drink the – she saves the milkshake for the mom, but they drink it together. And the milkshake has not melted at all in like 3 hours. It's like a beautiful, perfect milkshake. And I was like, all right. I get a sense that the laws of reality are not going to apply too much here. But that's fine. Like the whole thing was supposed to be kind of stylized and music video-like. And it sort of all – like it goes down easy that way. You know what I mean? So I had a good time.
Yeah, that's that again. That's why I say all that stuff is true. All the silliness is accurate, but that's the movie, and it's, it may not be for everybody because of that. But I think if frankly, if you see the poster and the title and you want to watch it, you're probably going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like if you're in a Gunpowder Milkshake, then you probably
right. Would. Like yeah. We chose this movie knowing. The poster is a bunch of women with guns, and it's called Gunpowder Milkshake. So Let's go. And we got exactly what we hoped.
Good job with the casting, too, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. Some really good, like, oh, casting moments in this movie, right? I almost don't want to say, in case people don't know, because, again, if this is the sort of movie that you're like, Gunpowder Milkshake, ladies with guns, I'm in. Then some of the ladies who show up with guns, you're going to be like, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I'm here for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, good times with that. Really quickly, I feel like last time we talked about the NBA Finals, we were like, yep.
We were wrong.
Phoenix got too many buckets.
We were wrong.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And here's the thing I think I was the most wrong about. Well, I mean, throw Chris Paul in there because I really thought there was like a corner turned in terms of, yeah, he did get banged up, but he's playing through it and he's playing like an MVP. And he was, but now it's an extended run of not. And I don't quite know how to explain that. I think he wants you to explain it with a hand injury, but I don't know if I'm ready to do that. I don't know. I don't know what to think anymore about that. Here's what I know what to think about. I believed, and I believe I said on this podcast, that I didn't think Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday, but certainly not both, could perform at their best with enough consistency to win this series, despite how great Giannis was. And at the very least, Chris Middleton is in the process of proving me wrong. And I gotta say, Drew Holiday, for all the ugliness offensively, throughout the series, he was better offensively last game, but generally still pretty bad. His defense has had a series changing effect, I think.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that you knew would be consistent, right? He's broke.
Yeah. But I maybe didn't realize it would. And again, maybe it is an injury and I'm being unfair, but it feels to me like Drew Holiday's defense has turned Chris Paul into just a guy.
Ooh. See, I mean, I definitely think Chris Paul is compromised in some way.
But who isn't?
Like, because here's the thing is that like we've seen Chris Paul have rough games shooting. You know, we've seen Chris Paul have rough games in the playoffs. I feel like seeing Chris Paul not be able to dribble, that's a sign that something's wrong.
Well, you know, but, what I mean? You know, there was that time early in the playoffs with the shoulder where he couldn't dribble at all.
Right.
Lately he just can't dribble at the ends of games. And he's like, yeah,
he's
throwing
a lot.
But the ones that are like fumbles are late. The ones early in the game have been throwaways. He's making poor decisions that he doesn't usually make. And I can't feel the man's hand. You know, it could all be related. But I'm just saying it feels to me like as much as it's anything physical, it's the physicality of Drew Holiday. And maybe that's wearing him down to a degree. And to me, I don't know if that is something we can say, bad luck, he's hurt again. If, like, Drew Holiday is capable of wearing you down to a point where you're not effective. I don't know.
I think Coach Bud, a man who has just been destroyed by NBA Twitter for, I don't know, a number of years now.
Well, I
think Coach Bud has to get some credit here.
Oh, of course. Because Pomona College's own. Pomona College's own coach, Michael Budenholzer. Here's the thing.
They decided, right? They're going to let we're going to let Booker get his and do what we can to limit everybody else. And yep. I think that that's been an effective strategy.
He is just slow enough with his adjustments to get killed on Twitter right before he turns the series in the favor of his team.
Yeah, someone should let him know.
Or at least that's how it's gone so far this season. And injuries have been a part of that, but like, you're absolutely right that in each series he deserves credit for over the course of 5 to 7 games adjusting, not so much on the fly, but game to game and slowly to where he sort of chokes teams out,
yeah,
strategically speaking. And I think that's been a really interesting aspect of this series, actually.
Yeah. Do you feel like Phoenix is dead now? It would not.
No.
I mean,
They're not dead.
I think they have a chance.
Because,
you know what
again,
I mean?
I don't think Chris Paul is, like, injury-wise compromised beyond the ability to have a big game. I mean, yes. I think it's clear that in their state of health, like, I don't know if campaign is quite right. He hasn't been as good since he, turned an ankle. Obviously, Saric is out. I don't know how healthy Torrey Craig is. So, like...
Well, this is the attrition...
On both teams.
And
not just on them.
Line up, yeah, the whole playoffs, right?
Exactly. Exactly. But I'm just saying, given where the Suns are at, they can't win without Chris Paul having something to say about it. So if he's the same guy he's been the last few games, I think this ends tonight.
Yeah. So as I understand it, teams that have been up 3-2 at home, it's happened 11 times. Up 3-2 and at home in game 6.
Only 11 and those times? Oh, in 11 the finals? Times. Specifically
in
the finals? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And out of those 11 times, the home team is 10-1 in game 6.
Who's the one?
The 2005 San Antonio Spurs.
2005.
Who then went on to win Game 7.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was the game after the Robert Horry shot. It was Game 5, and then they lost Game 6 at home. So
Robert Horry shot was Game 5. The one that bounced out to him?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So that's Detroit?
Yeah, they beat Detroit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that any of that has any relevance to tonight. This has been one of the weirdest series ever.
And I do think a lot of that, right? They played 2-3-2 for a lot of years, right? So a lot of times, you know what I mean?
Right. But here's another thing.
Too.
I really just think tonight and a potential Game 7 come down to the trio of Holiday, Middleton, and Chris Paul. Like, I think we kind of know what Booker and Giannis are going to do, right? Like, we kind of trust them and believe that they're going to be really good. But Chris Paul and, to an extent, DeAndre Ayton versus Middleton and Holiday, and who can be productive to support the superstars, that's pretty much what decides this, because everything else is so thin. I don't know that it matters as much. It's just who shows up the most of those supporting members.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, I mean, I guess there's, you know, that's the other thing about, right, being Game 6. That's maybe why it's relevant, right? Is that historically, right, your supporting guys, they are much more likely to show up at home. So.
Yeah, yeah, but obviously
– Phoenix in Game 5.
So. Yeah, and 11 is a small enough sample size that, like, I'd have to go look at who those teams were to know if that had anything to do with it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. You know, right. Yeah, I mean, you can't base too much on 11. But it is 11 out of, you know, the history of the league, so.
Yeah.
All right. I'm excited for the – I think it's been a better finals than – we might have expected coming in, right?
I guess. I expected it to be pretty good. There's a lot to like here. All the things we've talked about. Like, even though I did not predict Chris Middleton being as consistently good as he's been in this series, Chris Middleton's consistency was an issue we were watching from the beginning, right? And it's been an interesting one. I think a lot of this series sort of falls into that category. I expected a better Chris Paul, but would Chris Paul hold up physically and, you know, mentally was a question I had going into the series. So it's and, you know, we're getting an interesting response.
He is the guy, you know, from a league perception standpoint, right, who has the most at stake now, right? Because if they lose this series, like, then it's going to be like Chris Paul never won a title, and who knows if he'll ever get a look that good again. Like, this may have been a better look than Barkley or any of those guys had.
Long-term legacy-wise, he definitely has the most to lose.
And short-term, I think Giannis has kind of already done the legacy rehab, right? Like, the notion of we can't vote for Giannis for MVP anymore, like he's a regular season player, has been obliterated. You know what I mean?
Some of these narratives are hard to track, and like, how seriously should they have been taken in the first place? How seriously should we respond to them now? I don't necessarily know the answer to that, but Giannis is doing good, and again, I almost
Giannis.
What's that?
I'm so impressed by Giannis.
He's incredible. Yeah,
like, not the play, but like him as a dude, just all
the whole
of it,
package.
You know? Yeah,
the whole package, and I think some of that gets him a level of disrespect that I don't totally understand. But like, I agree with you. I'm endlessly impressed by everything about the guy. And, you know, except free throw shooting and 3-point shooting, which, like, is fine. Lots of the greatest players of all time didn't shoot threes or free throws particularly well. Like,
especially the ones over 7 feet tall.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so this notion of
this guy's grown since he's been in the league.
I know.
Like, a significant amount, right? Like, it's hard to shoot free throws, like, with that kind of body.
And just in general, these people talking about, like, he's unskilled because he doesn't have those two specific skills. It's just like, you're confused about what all goes into being a skilled basketball player. The level of skill that this guy possesses at his size, it's incredible. And there's
watch that guy dribble on the break or pass in any context and say he's not a skilled player?
I know. And it's so weird because I feel like it's the same crowd. Like, I've been watching Steph Curry and the response to him for all these years locally, and I feel like it's the same crowd nationally that wants to diminish Steph because he's not a dominant athlete, wants to diminish Giannis because he is a dominant athlete. And I just don't totally understand it. Like, it's like, if you're not the perfect – if you're not somewhere shape – and size-wise, physically, between, like, Mike and Kobe and LeBron, people want to somehow discredit what you're doing, and I just don't get it.
I have just completely gut feeling. I have no proof to any of this, but I feel like all those people are, like, Kobe lovers who somehow feel like people doing it some other way is an affront to the Kobe way, to the mom mentality or something.
Maybe, and it's just – it's more about having that nastiness – than it is about, like, size or athleticism.
And those are two guys that don't have that nastiness, really. Although Giannis has developed a pretty excellent mean mug.
They both do. Right. Steph can be nasty on the court. Steph, they're just both.
He's an insanely competitive dude from everything I hear.
They're just both surprisingly normal humans.
Yeah.
And for some reason, like, that rubs me the right way, but for some reason it rubs some people the wrong way, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm going to stop talking about it before I say something about Kobe that gets me in trouble.
Amen.
Yeah, let's jump in homework.
All right.
So obviously I didn't watch McCartney 3-2-1. We'll get to that next week.
Yeah,
it's not on your plate.
Then there's two things that we specifically talked about last week, saving for this week, but you did watch those. Just
I watched
not,
both of them. Yeah. Shmigadoon, which is on Apple, which is the Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong show. You haven't watched this yet, right?
No, and I want to say, and you're not allowed to respond to this because you cheated and already watched it, but this was your idea to watch Schmigadoon. It is a show that I am skeptical about because it's a musical, although I understand that it is satire. And I have to say, I have not really watched a preview, but in watching Ted Lasso, I've caught some bits and bobs of the preview, and I am not encouraged. So let's see. But this one's on you, pal.
Yeah, fair enough. And I should also warn you, this is not going to help matters that they're, you know, your nemesis, Fred Armisen, is in it.
That doesn't surprise me. Again, he is not my nemesis.
You know, it's a Lorne Michaels vehicle, so there's a lot of SNL vibes. He is not, and he's not in it super prominently.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that.
All right, there you go. So, and then season two of Miracle or season three of Miracle Workers.
Yeah, it's season three now. Mm-hmm. We had the God season, and then the like old timeies season.
Yeah, the Middle Ages.
Middle Ages. Season. Yep.
Yeah, this one is the Oregon Trail.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited.
So set in pioneer land, and you know, if you know that show, it's the same cast. Everyone just plays different roles.
Yeah.
And then what else have we got? Oh, HBO has a documentary about Woodstock 99 that will be airing this week, and we can get on HBO Max as well. And then we already mentioned Ted Lasso, right? So Ted Lasso season two.
Woo!
Cannot wait.
Positive vibes, baby. Let's do this.
And that's it. That's the list. We're done.
Okay. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.